back with episode 813 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
This is Gary from Jacksonville, and we get to talk about shows this show, right?
Yes, shows this show. That's what we're doing.
Shows this show, yes.
Yes, and we are going to be talking about this week's worth of episodic discussions. So we kind of mentioned it earlier this week. It's a shorter list than what we've been dealing with lately, but that doesn't mean that we're going to give anything short shrift. We're going to get into it as much as it deserves. So before we do any of that, Gary, if you don't mind giving a disclaimer...
Yes, this episode we will definitely be talking about shows that recently aired. If you haven't watched these shows yet and you don't want to know the endings, cliffhangers, or who lives or dies, listen on. If it does matter to you for some reason, such as you're that invested in the show, then put us on pause, watch the show, and then come back and listen to what we have to say. And if you don't agree with it, drop us an email or a voicemail or any way you want to contact us, because we would like to hear what you think.
That's right. We definitely would. And we are going to go ahead and get into these shows. And this may be a shorter show as we have a little bit less to talk about. But so be it. So be it. All right. So we have a total of 11 shows, 13 episodes. One of them we didn't have anybody give scores for, and that was Class. As I mentioned last time, I've pretty much let this show drop. And it looks like everybody has as well. It was perhaps a well-intentioned spinoff. I know there are some people who are fans of it, particularly over at Pod Culture. You can probably hear a bit of comments about that show on some of their recent episodes, perhaps. But it's just not our cup of tea, unfortunately. No English reference intended on that one. However, there are other shows here that are definitely going to be on our list. We have a top three and a bottom three. And because it is a shorter list, we have perhaps some surprising folks down here at the bottom of the list. Or not, depending on how you look at it. But yeah, there's not a whole lot of difference between the top and the bottom. The bottom of the list is down by around a 7.5, which is technically not average, is a little above average. And the top show is up at a 9.5. So things are skewed a little bit higher this time around as far as the average goes. And it is actually spread out pretty nicely. If you look at these scores, Gary, it's spaced out pretty nice. It's not all bunched together. So, there's only maybe a dozen shows here to talk about, but it is... it is spread out nicely enough, and there are clear winners, and there are clear shows at the bottom of the list. So I'm going to go ahead and start then here at the bottom with a show that, I hate to say that it's towards the bottom, but as we'll have some comments here from Edmund, maybe it's deserved. And that's The Americans, Season 5, Episode 13, The Soviet Division. In the season finale, Philip and Elizabeth race against the clock as a life hangs in the balance, while Stan faces an uncertain future. And Edmund and I both gave this an 8, and here's what Edmund has to say. A subdued end to a straight-jacketed season. Oh boy. Hearing the Jays on the final podcast confirmed again, they thought they were delivering something more powerful and profound with the final twist that kept them stateside. Instead, it felt pedestrian and a rehash of personal attitudes and conflicts that had been present since the pilot. And great, so now we know Kimmy was critical in the end, but keeping her sidelined so long didn't do the narrative flow any favors. That whole situation has always been slimy and uncomfortable, and keeping it more front and center would have reinforced Phillips and by extension the audience's desire to get out, and made the irony of it leading to the intelligence cue that stymies everything more poignant. Still hoping this was just a miscalculation of balance between slow setup and more interesting complications to come. And that sums it up pretty well. For me, I basically said it was a fairly solid ending to the season, pointing to better things for the final run. But the path getting here this season was pretty weak. This was by far, in my opinion, the weakest season of the show. I think that our scores bear that out. And if I go and look at where Edmund and I kind of left this one, the Americans fell way down the list this year compared to before. Maybe not way down. But this was one of the weaker seasons. We actually thought that season 3 was kind of weak, but this was pretty far down there as well. It's still above average, but not nearly what we're used to seeing. All right, next on the list here, it's surprising this season, but maybe it shouldn't be given some of the controversial opinions we've had. Doctor Who, Series 10, Episode 7, The Pyramid at the End of the World. An ancient pyramid appears overnight, and a countdown to the world's destruction begins as three opposing armies prepare to attack each other. And this got an average of 7.83. Edmund and I liked it a little bit more than Gary did. Gary, your opinion on this, and I know... Capaldi.
Actually, I really don't have that many Capaldi complaints this time because it's, I think, most of the my issues rested with purely with the script.
Okay.
Go ahead. This what do you want to call it? The device of this week is, of course, the blindness and his relative chance to slightly overcome it with technology. And it's often achingly done in a way that I didn't care for. The Bill, again, continues to I don't know why she's there. K-9 was more contributive to a story than she is. I don't feel that she even needed to be in this script. And that's sad because often I feel a companion contributes not only to the everyman point of view or our point of view, but is usually somehow involved in the solving process. And I, again, don't feel that Bill is fulfilling any of these drives or purposes. So I'm sort of frustrated. I guess I was a little happy that we got to see, I believe it was Unit. I don't think they actually said it, but I felt that it was. So I will go with that. And finally, the villain in itself, I thought the concept was sound. The makeup was reasonable. And it was just the execution. As I think to myself, these are the same people that gave us the Pandorica, that gave us the silence, that gave us the whispering, weeping angels, and now we're getting this. It's just very frustrating. I admit to not being one to jump on the get Moffat the heck off the bandwagon, but a few more like this and I might be.
I don't blame you, because quite frankly, that's kind of where I'm at with this too. I'm just slightly more favorable, perhaps, because this was at least a little more of an action packed episode that had some interesting ideas, and I did like the fact that the Doctor's arrogance came into play at the end. It's always nice to see that. Maybe not nice to see him be so arrogant that it kind of leads to bigger problems, but it was nice that he didn't get away with it, I guess you could say. And that something so mundane kind of took him down, you could say. What's kind of interesting then is that it was so mundane. Who puts a simple physical combination lock on an airlock? I don't know who would. I don't think it was even an airlock per se, but even so, that was the first thing that came to my mind, was that that's a problem. That shouldn't be what the plot relies upon, but okay, that's what they went for, and it was a simple way to convey what I think was ultimately the idea that the Doctor, in his arrogance and hubris, was saying that he can overcome blindness without asking for anybody's help or without telling anybody, and he'll be just perfectly fine, and he even walks into the situation feeling like he's got everything under control, and that's when you know it's all going to come back to haunt him. But even so, I completely understand what you mean. I still don't understand what people find so perceptive about Bill. I don't get it. She's only as perceptive as the story allows her to be at any given time, so she feels very much like a walking, talking, plot convenience in some cases. And I don't think she's that perceptive. There's something that is just not clicking with me as far as what people love about this character. And I have yet to hear somebody tell me definitively what it is. It's almost like if people like her in general, just like her, they find reasons to say that, but then when you try and say, well, can you give me examples of all what makes her unique about as a companion, they can't come up with anything. It's kind of odd.
Well, if I didn't know any better, I'd say, where is the companion? She often seems like that secondary companion that is there and provides some sort of sense of worry or risk of being injured or some outside assistance of some kind, but just isn't in the center of the action. That's almost what it feels like, even though she is. She just it just doesn't feel that they're writing enough for her. And as I look back over other companions, even ones of dispute, such as Donna or Rose, they were still given so much more to work with than what Bill is being given.
Now, Edmund makes a comment here that might actually speak directly to what we're saying here. He says, giving it an 8, which I gave it as well, the latest mysterious aliens invasion continues. Bill's inexperience in these situations was way too convenient as a means of twisting the knife at the end. So again, it's like they use her and give her a level of experience based on what they need her to do in the plot. While the Doctor's hubris in concealing his condition was a nice conceit, the Doctor's devices have always been laden with so much plutonium, having them stymied by Enigma wheels felt forced. It just seemed like also the whole thing of what consent meant to the monks was never clear. They gave all these rules, or at least said that, no, this type of consent is not true. This type of consent is not true. And one of them is that you cannot consent if you're fearful. And yet, I don't see how Bill at the end was not consenting out of fear over what the doctor's fate would be.
Mm.
I didn't get it. It didn't seem like there was enough of a distinction there, and it felt like it was just... It added up to a more enjoyable viewing experience, and there was a nice cliffhanger to it because you're not sure where it could go from here, but at the same time, the seams are showing so badly, it feels like, right now. This is not, in my opinion, as good as last series, and that's why I feel really just perplexed when people are telling me that this is their favorite season with Capaldi. I don't know why. Unless they really didn't like Clara, which I cannot... Okay, fine, fair enough. You know, you don't like Capaldi all that much, but... There's some elusive thing here that I'm not getting, and it's very rare for me to not at least appreciate something about a companion, and I'm just not feeling anything from this person.
I'll admit that Clara did somewhat overpower Capaldi when she was here, because given the depth and length of her arc, that it couldn't help but slightly overpower the new guy. Yeah. So if they feel that this is the first time he's able to be on his own, so to speak, and certainly with Bill's contributions, he is on his own. Perhaps that's where they're coming from.
I happen to feel like Nardole is a much better companion, in my opinion.
I'm not disagreeing with you. But he is supposed to be that secondary one I'm talking about,
right?
Not the primary one, and it sure feels like we wish it was the other way.
It feels like almost like it should be, the way that they're writing it, it should be the doctor and two almost co-companions that are just kind of come and go in the story. But Bill is definitely more prominent.
Well, that's sort of what we got with... Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
That's sort of what we ended up getting with Amy and Rory, where Rory was definitely started off as this secondary comic relief / somebody to worry about everyone for, until eventually he rose up to become that second primary one that you're talking about.
Right. Yeah. So. There are debates over how well they managed to play that out in the end. But, of course, I'm slightly biased. So on the one hand, this is another thing almost like, I hate to say it, almost like I was talking about Sense8 last show, where there are reasons why I feel like it's kind of unfortunate that I don't have any sense of liking Bill, because it's like, here's someone who is really different. This is not the same thing that we usually get, which is, you know, the pretty white girl, you know, but at the same time, it's like, you're not giving me much with this character. And I don't see these very clear, quote unquote, character traits. Like, she's extremely perceptive. Well, we were told she was in the first episode. Where is the actual demonstration of that? I'm not seeing it. And maybe that's just, you know, like, like I said, I ask that question. I have yet to have anyone actually give a definitive answer that this is the thing that Bill brings to the table that the Doctor doesn't have. It changes, it seemingly changes with every single episode. So, I don't know. It's just not clicking for me with Bill. Not to dwell on that, but that is kind of what's dragging this season, I feel like, a bit. It's just not... It's not up to the usual par for me. I'm just not as excited to watch each episode. I'm just kind of waiting for it to really kick into high gear, and it hasn't done that yet. And, yeah, the scores are definitely... This is the lowest scored season of Doctor Who since we started tracking it. So, yeah, that's not as positive a turn of events. It's definitely the lowest of the three seasons with Capaldi. And, yeah. We did not score the first series with Matt Smith, but even in my recollection, I remember that season being the strongest of the seasons with Matt Smith. He had a pretty good run, but I liked the first run with him best. That's the one that I go back to more than any of his, you know. And then with Capaldi, I really felt like last year was the best year. And that this is a huge drop down. And the scores reflect that. The scores seem to be almost 0.75 points lower at this stage, which is a pretty big drop. All right, not to dwell on that any more than we already have. the last show down at the very bottom of the list is Prison Break, Season 5, Episode 9, Behind the Eyes. Dangerous threats keep Michael and Lincoln fighting to protect Sarah and Mike in the Season 5 finale, and this got a 7.5. I'll simply put it this way. All said and done, we've now seen the entire revival of this series, and I just have to say, I really don't think that it justifies itself at the end of the day. I think that it was nice that they had a happier ending than the original ending to the series, but they pretty much, that was the only thing that changed. Otherwise, it was pretty much, okay, let's go, let's have everybody run around for a bit, and now Michael has a happy ending instead of a sad ending. The end. Okay, that's nice. You give us a happier ending, and at least they didn't try to end it on a cliffhanger. I'll give them that, too. That would have been extremely annoying. Like some other revival that they had on Fox recently. That could have been a disaster if they hadn't got a surprising second revival. But anyway. So, I don't know about Prison Break. I'm kind of glad that it got a chance, but at the same time, I feel like it squandered it. I'd much rather see those actors back on their respective home shows. You know,
Legends well, Prison Break was out first, John.
That may be true, but they've found new homes since then. You know, let's get some of them back on the DCW shows. Let's get Sarah back on Colony.
And, well, yeah. Really, they need like a Brave and Bold and have you know, have both of them just on their own show.
That's it. There you go. They need to have the Leonard.
Or do you just want a half hour of Leonard just talking?
He can.
Would that work for you? Just, you know, have him stand up and just, you know, and just read a speech.
I want him and Mick to narrate the episodes of Legends of Tomorrow. Because come on, when Mick does the intro to that show, it's one of the funniest parts of the show. But anyway, the recaps by Mick are great.
It was interesting. I was watching the actor give a speech, and you know, his regular voice patterns are so different that
yes, they are.
It's like, yeah, at first you expect him to start talking that way, and then when he does it, it's sort of a shock. It's often, you know, it almost equated for me when you don't realize an actor's English.
Yeah, like Andrew Lincoln on the Walking Dead when Rick talks, it's like, whoa, wait a second, wrong, very wrong.
Brain not connecting. Yes.
Exactly. All right, let's turn our attention to Better Fare then, and let's go to our top three for the week. And we will start with our number three show here, which is The 100, Season 4, Episode 13, Prime Fea. In the Season 4 finale, it's a race against the end of the world as Prime Fea arrives, forcing the heroes to make impossible decisions to ensure their survival. And I'm sure I pronounced that wrong, but I really don't care. Really good episode, came in at a 9. I feel like the scope of this episode and this finale is really quite limited to just a handful of characters, but that's probably the only way they could have gone and not been disappointing. They do a really good job because they can focus on just a handful of characters. And I feel like they crafted this as a potential series finale, and yet they managed to tack on a scene at the end that led right into the fourth season pretty organically, I think. Since they just included a time jump and basically said, okay, this is where the story can go from here. So good for them. They ended on a high note. Good season. I think that this was a kind of return to form season, the fourth season. And I meant that they would lead into the fifth season, and I'm looking forward to that. So, yeah, good for them. They got a renewal, and they are going strong. So good way to end up that season. Also ending their season and coming in with a really strong showing here is Arrow, Season 5, Episode 23, Leon Yu. The battle between Oliver and Adrian Chase culminates in a final epic battle on Leon Yu as Season 5 ends. And this came in at an average of 9.17. Henry gave it a 9, saying, if the show sticks with a complete overhaul of the cast, which seems unlikely, it would definitely cement the fact that it wants to move on to its next phase with clarity instead of filled with questions. Oh, boy. Now, Edmund gave some other comments, which we'll leave until at the end of discussion of this show. But, Gary, any thoughts on Arrow's season finale?
I really don't want an Arrow 3.0.
Yeah, neither do I.
Well, that being said, they did pull off the I felt that they did pull off the 2.0 pretty well. I've really started to some of the characters have started to grow on me. Was it Wild Dog? I've been really enjoying, and even Mr. Terrific took a little bit longer, but I'm enjoying his character as well. I was worried that another geek in the mix might somehow diminish Felicity, and it hasn't. Also, we managed to get a nice Olicity moment back again. We've been getting them, but this one seems a lot stronger, and if she should survive, I definitely think we're sort of really back together again, which was nice. The only thing that sort of held me back from really going much higher than the 9 that I gave the show was Chase. I'm not disputing that I like the idea that he really planned and thought stuff up and sort of knew Oliver in his head what Oliver would do next. I didn't mind that. It's just his sort of not varying at all in, you know what you have to do. You know what you have to do. It was just so monotone and repetitious that it sort of, I was like, is the guy dumb or something? You know, he must be able to talk to him and not say the same 10 words for the last 2.5 episodes. It was, I found that's somewhat slightly annoying. And the, even within the comic book world, the sheer scope to be able to plant literally hundreds of bombs that are cable interlinked all throughout that island just seems a little bit ridiculous. So I wish they could have come up with a better sort of doomsday machine than necessarily that. I thought another missile right to the island might have been a good idea. They've used that before, and so that might have been a thought, but it just seemed a little bit implausible. How much spare time was he spending there with a shovel to literally lay hundreds of bombs and have them all connected by wiring? So that seemed a little odd. Also, we got to see the end of probably, more than likely, the end of Malcolm Merlyn. Mm. Which John Barrowman pretty much has confirmed on his social media. And although we never actually saw a body, so we don't know. So we'll have to see, though. But if he says he's not planning to be around for some time, then that would should put a kibosh on most of those concepts. We did find out that Oliver's son was indeed alive after all. And I actually liked that little play that Adrian tried to push him and say that he had killed him after nothing else seemed to be working. It seemed like it was the first chink in Chase's armor throughout this whole event that that Oliver didn't kill him at that point, and that he had to go ahead and push with that extra bit that he was sure would absolutely push him over the edge, but thankfully it didn't. So that was that worked out quite well. And so overall, I like this idea that this whole sort of premeditation concept, it didn't become too trite for me that Chase could outthink Oliver. I was worried it would become something that was sort of overdone, but geez, it did seem to work pretty well throughout the season. So overall, I was pretty happy with Chase as the big bad. And last but not least, we got to see Deathstroke again, which was I never expected to see him back on this show again. So that was a pleasant surprise. And I do enjoy the way the two characters at least play off each other. So it was interesting. I enjoyed the false front of Deathstroke, changing alliances. I thought that was a cute little twist and well done. I thought the Black Canary device was a little bit of a cheat, but I'm willing to forego that one. I thought they could easily have escaped chains without her. Yes. Sonic cry. The meeting of the canaries, where they're both sort of knocking each other out, including he's not Captain Lance anymore. I'm not sure how to refer to it, but Detective Lance. Okay. I don't know either. But anyway, that Lance guy, that he was sort of able to work through his daughter issues by being able to knock her out, was sort of nice. He's obviously been shown floundering in a lot of his personal life and his sort of mindset. And to me, that seems like that's sort of cheesy, but at the same time, it's a step that he's worked his way through Laurel, and hopefully maybe some of his alcoholism that was still sort of lingering in the backgrounds a little bit, that maybe this is the start of a new Lance.
Yeah, could be. I mean, it really sounds like if everybody survives, this will be a good breaking or jumping off point. And I did like at least the visual effect of the island blowing up, which is kind of a nice metaphor for we're done with the island.
I know. I said, does that mean we don't have to flash back anymore? I wonder.
Yeah, that's the idea. So, all right.
Oh, just as a side note, the whole very sort of the tail end of it, where they show that Oliver, put the wig on and yes. was not, and they basically retconned his whole origin in the last 10-15 minutes of the show was cool. It really came out well for me. I have no problem accepting or believing it, but I thought it was really really a nice little twist on top of everything else.
Yeah, it really was actually nice how it all dovetailed.
Yes.
All right. Edmund had this comment to say, and this is more about the DCW in general. He says, I've been following parts of the DCW via reviews and recaps, mainly this and The Flash. What I've heard has me interested enough to cherry-pick parts of Arrow now that it's over on Netflix, certainly the final run of episodes. Iris, Savitar, and Future Barry? Nah, not so much. Hard to argue. Arrow had the better season by far.
Yes.
Yeah. And, yeah, if The Flash had probably its worst season. So I can't argue that it was a little bit of a...
Well, yeah, Savitar seemed a rather lackluster villain. Alchemy actually seems better as I think about it. And the season of dread that this was, as we basically had Iris's death hanging over us for the whole season, was just, I mean, put a downer on Barry's usual sort of, geez, I have a rough life kind of mentality that he typically has. And so to have that on top of it really made this a very dark season. Combine that with Caitlin turning into Killer Frost. I really didn't feel like anybody won this season. You know, yes, Iris didn't get killed, but other people did. We lost friends. You did not leave feeling happy the way that you did when, Barry's father was released, or we found out that, Jay got released, the real Jay got released. There was just no sort of joy in this episode. And we like to think about Flash as the happier of the two shows when you think about Arrow versus Flash. But, geez, even with the explosion and everyone possibly dead, you still felt better at the end of Arrow than you did in Flash. So I think part of what hurt Flash this season was that lack of hope or optimism that just was not there this season.
I can't disagree with that at all. All right, our number one show, and this is a little bit of an unusual situation or example, is iZombie Season 3, Episode 9, 20-Sided Die. A dungeon master is killed, and the probe reveals that he was up to more than just playing in his mother's basement. Yes, this came in at a 9.5, largely because this was one of the funniest episodes of the series. No question. You don't even really have to know what the ongoing storylines are at all. This just has so much D&D-related humor that you could just watch it on that level alone and just enjoy the hell out of it. There are literally parts where people are making decisions because they're rolling a 20-sided die. So it's damn funny. It's timely because of the resurgence, or the surge, I guess you could say, because it's not really a resurgence, but this whole idea of, streaming people playing D&D. And the popularity that has seen with shows like Critical Role and others. And it just, yeah, it works. It works really well. And you could just tell that the cast was enjoying the hell out of it. So really just a great episode. If you're thinking about just like, oh, here's just an example of a show that even though it's got ongoing storylines, this is almost an episode you could pluck right out and still appreciate just because of the humor of it. This would be that. And that's why it comes in at the top of our list. We've got then just a handful of other shows that we can talk about. Gary, if you have any here that you want to jump in on, if you don't choose that, I will.
I feel so bad because I want to like it better. I really do. And okay. The show I'm talking about is Twin Peaks, and I guess the twin episodes that were pretty much released back-to-back, episodes 3 and 4.
Yes, that would be Season 3, Episodes 3 and 4, The Return, Parts 3 and 4. Summed up by Call for Help. Boy, I have a feeling this is a slight difference of opinion on this, but Rob over at VogNetwork.com, Rob Roberts from Orange Lounge Radio, says, hello! Agree, the scene with Wally was rough, but I get it was an homage to Marlon Brando, but I hope that the character serves a better purpose. It was kind of an homage, but it was also a very deliberate
Oh, jeez.
Kind of thing. Otherwise, I like that the points seem to come together a little clearer in episodes 3 and 4, just a little. I also enjoyed the Denise Bryson cameo. Hope we get some more quick "where are they now" resolutions to minor characters, besides just a wink and a nod across the bar like in episode 2. Yeah, because, you know, we just saw Shelley and James at the end of episode 2, and we haven't seen them again since then. But I believe we do see them a lot more in episodes to come. Yeah, this to me was kind of... It had some really out there stuff, especially at the beginning of episode 3. It had a lot of comedy, though, more than I think the previous two episodes did. And a lot more of the nostalgic factors, especially in episode 4. But your brief thoughts on Twin Peaks episodes 3 and 4, Gary? Like you said, you wanted to like it more, but what kind of held you back?
I feel like I need cliff notes or something. I mean, I see the plot and I see what they're doing, but at the same time, it looks like they could have done it in about 15 minutes. And that we just seem to have all of this... And oh, geez, I'll use my term, art house filler. He's being clever just to be clever, and it doesn't feel like a lot of it is actually advancing a story at all, or even in some ways part of the story. It's just being put on the screen, maybe because it's visually nice, or it's terribly complex, and so it wants to be included in it. But and I'll accept, you know, this is Lynch, and I'm not trying to dispute that he has a way of getting around to things. But at the same time, so much of it just feels utterly extraneous. And I mean, even the things that might be tangentially important to a story or arc, I'll even give it those. But it just seems like there's more, so much extra on top of that that's just added for, I don't know, for just to show it off. And it really doesn't involve the plot, the story, or anything at all. And it's, I won't say it's frustrating, but it's, I feel like, you know, I want meat and I'm getting bread.
And I'm wondering if you're referring largely to like the first third or half of season 3 or episode 3, where it's very much art film type aesthetic.
Yes, 4 did get a little bit better, yes. But
yeah, but
yes.
3 was rough at the beginning. I agree that was like, there were even some moments where I'm like, okay, we get it. We get what you're doing here. Can you move on? And that is actually one of my comments, that it started to take a little bit away from the excitement of having it back, which was that the pacing... Let me put it this way. The pacing the first time through sometimes feels like a crawl. And then the second time through, it feels a lot faster and more organic. But, for instance, the joke with Wally Brando...
when he actually talked about his godfather?
Yes. it's a funny joke. There are some moments in there that are like very intentionally messing with the whole idea of Twin Peaks and its quirky characters, and of course this is what the son of Lucy and Andy would look like. There was the one point where in his meanderings he says something about the, like, my shadow's always beside me except at night or on cloudy days. And when he got to that part, I couldn't help but laugh. I mean, it's a pretty, yes. Like, he's so pretentious that it's hilarious. But at the same time, the first time you watch that, it takes forever. And you just get the feeling that, again, this is like, I want to do this in 18 episodes. Well, you could have done it in 10. Well, I want to do it in 18. All right. But that means we're going to have moments like that. I really do feel that way. And... yeah, the thing at the beginning of episode 3 could have been done in half the time, and I think the point would have gotten across. It's really, you know, interesting to watch, but at the same time, it's like, I'm tired of hearing knocking at the door. Just get to the point. I even feel like and I know that this is all very subjective, Coop as Mr. Jackpot was hilarious to me. We were laughing ourselves silly. Especially when he just was walking around with the $5 bill asking for help, or just repeating what people are saying, and it got so freaking ridiculous, but it still was pretty damn funny. At the same time, I could acknowledge that once people got the general idea, move on, and it kind of played itself out. And until we see episode 5, it's kind of hard to see if it played itself out completely. Which is the only thing that's like, if that was a one episode thing with that's what you're going to explore, okay, I'll accept it. If that goes on for 3 more episodes, there's no way that's going to play. That's going to be incredibly tedious. So I feel like it all depends. Now, again, if it's maybe because we saw four episodes in 2 weeks, and in some cases, because the episodes 3 and 4 were available digitally right after the premiere, some people, they did a 4-hour mainline. And I think there's good and bad to that. I think that it really makes some of these longer sequences feel more gratuitous. It's going to be interesting now that we see one episode per week, if there are these long stretches, if it feels better or worse.
I got news for you. I don't think I could mainline these. It really takes me a little while to sort of absorb them. And if I watch four, I would either glance over things that maybe I do need time to think about, or, you know, I might miss stuff that if I just mainlined four of them all together, because by no means do they sort of fit.
True. I mean, I feel like there are, even though this contradicts what I said a couple episodes ago, upon reflection, there are certain elements, even if there aren't story. When I say episodic, I think of there being like an A plot, a B plot, and there's like clearly three acts in that plot thread in the episode, right? Mm-hmm. Where here, it's more of a, okay, here's the episode where this happens. Here's the episode where this happens. It's not necessarily a plot arc, but it's a plot element that takes place in this episode. Like, episode 4 is the one with Bobby, it's the one with Mr. Jackpot, and it's the one with the conversations between Albert and Gordon, where the plot starts to thicken. Okay. It's not like there is a lot that happens with those, and it's not like it's very obvious what it all adds up to, but those are things that happen in the episode. But now I understand why there aren't conventional episode descriptions. It's, you know, thematic, it's mood, it's tone. So, yeah, I get your point pretty solidly, I think. But, yeah, I think you're right. Trying to watch four episodes of this, by the end of the fourth episode, you're really kind of reeling and you need a little time to really absorb it. And I think that taking one at a time might, 1 hour at a time might help weekly going forward in that perspective. I get what you're saying.
Yeah, and once again, my daughter this time around tried to sit down next to it with me. And again, just...
Nope.
Utterly. I was like, I know everything, and I still am barely grasping some of this stuff. Forget it. So.
Oh yeah, definitely. It's just not amenable necessarily to just jumping into. But that's where I feel like, yeah, the beginning of episode 3, a little indulgent, to say the least. It could have been done differently, but it was nice to see the actress that played Renette Pulaski was the woman in the weird. Not the one with the eyes that were covered, but rather the woman by the fireplace.
Yes.
That was Renette. At least it was the actress who played Renette. Who knows if it was supposed to be Renette Pulaski. But little things like that are nice to pick out. And I think, like you said, if you mainline it, you're going to miss those nuances of what's, you know, hey, that person came back, or hey, there's a little detail that could be interesting to see if it becomes something more. But yeah. See, it's just one of those things where we're still early on. We're not sure what the significance of anything is. So.
Yeah, who knows? It might all actually matter, and I just don't know.
Yeah, exactly, right? But that is, once again, turning around to why this is kind of must-watch to a certain degree. It's like, yeah, this is exactly the feeling you had back at the beginning. Where are the clues buried in all this other stuff? So, beyond that... just a couple other shows that are here as we wrap up. The Leftovers, Season 3, Episode 7, The Most Powerful Man in the World, came in at an 8.75. Edmund says here, the return to Kevin's fantasy realm from International Assassin was surreal and absurd, continuing the commentary on Justin Theroux's Member with the Shelf twice. Mm-hmm. But ultimately powerful, too. Kevin reaches a rare moment of clarity while literally unlocking his heart, no less, although I now know God only knows is inextricably entwined with Big Love in my head. In the end, Kevin gets to destroy this afterlife, his crutch and escape valve, and Patty once again, because why not use every excuse you can to get Ann Dowd back on the show? Why not find out how and whether he can face... Now we find out how and whether he can face his demons in real life, whatever that is. And I was intrigued that Meg and not Laurie showed up as the Secretary of Defense. Perhaps we were misreading her fate last episode? Will the finale contain more hope than we expect? Am I clutching at straws? Probably. Yeah, I don't see The Leftovers ending in a way that is going to be happy and cheery. Just saying. We also had Outcast, Season 2, Episode 9, This Is How It Starts, which came in at an 8.5. And we have American Gods, Season 1, Episode 5, Lemon Scented You, which came in at an 8. And Edmund says about this one, a fine introduction to the central conflict between the old gods and the new, although I was a little miffed at them not getting away with the delightfully simple bank caper. Jillian's transformations continue to astound, and Crispin Glover gets to mine his eccentricities and charisma as Mr. World. Laura and the Leprechaun sounds like an unfortunate spinoff and largely plays that way. Yes, because I continue to say that Laura is frustratingly hard to like. You often want to just see her come to a bad end. But I'd also like the fact that they very clearly stated what the stakes are and what the premise is, and Gillian Anderson is, yes, killing it in her various incarnations. She does a really great Bowie in this episode. Like, literally dead-on Bowie. It's surprising. But yes, as I said, we had a lot of good episodes this week, and to say that Twin Peaks only came in at an 8.33, that's still above average. It just was a surprisingly strange combination of things in those two episodes. All right, well, we will come back next week with, or actually, we might be off next week. I'm not sure. I don't know about your schedule, Gary. I know that it's still a little bit held up with all the hiking and preparation for your big event later this month.
But, we do have another hiking event, yes.
Yeah, but, and we'll be off at a convention next weekend on our end. So I'm not sure if we will be back in time to really be ready to record next weekend. So it may be that we will be coming back in 2 weeks once again. But hey, just keep your eyes peeled and maybe we will have material next time. We shall find out. Ourselves, but I would expect definitely 2 weeks, if not next week. Any other last thoughts for this week, Gary?
No, I think we covered everything.
I think we did as well. So we're going to go ahead and wrap it up here. So until next time.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google+, under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the Critical Myth.